Well, summertime for me is often a time for reading, and I spent some time here even in this last week looking at Flora Wellner's book on forgiveness. I don't mind bragging a little bit, but I was kind of out in the sunshine, and I had a cup of coffee in one hand, and I could hear the water fall and the sunshine and the clouds and the mountains just peeking out above Ross Lake. It was, well, I'm just bragging, but it was wonderful. But in that book, Wellner recounts the experience of a friend working in a veterinary clinic as a young student. And I can't remember if it was a gerbil or a hamster, but the veterinarian was preparing for a delicate and, well, precise surgery on this small animal. And of course, in preparation for that, there has to be some delicate shaving of the little creature. And it was the assistant's job to keep the operating theater clean. And so she was assigned the task of carefully vacuuming up all the little bits of hair. And even before I could read on to the next line, maybe you're already guessing too, that, well, a little too much enthusiasm on the vacuuming, and all of a sudden the little mammal ended up in the tank of the vacuum cleaner, schloink. And shock and horror, this poor woman aghast at what had just happened. But the vet, ever the calm one, just turned off the machine and opened the container and got the little creature out and set it on the counter and brushed it off and continued with the procedure. Everything was just fine. The next day, though, a dog was brought into the clinic. The dog had been on the streets. It was astray. Hair matted. It was malnourished. Scabbed over wounds on legs and body, some of them still oozing with infection. The animal smelled. The dog had fleas. The dog was in terrible shape. And the assistant to the veterinarian felt a kind of sympathy and revulsion all at the same time. The vet sized it up. "Better give him a bath," she said. But even as the assistant began filling the tub, the dog became anxious and visibly agitated, straining against its leash, barking. There was a note in the file: hydrophobic. Huh? It became clear that this bathing would be a very difficult exercise. The poor dog had likely been abused, probably even tortured. They were guessing that the former owner had actually tried to drown the animal, and no wonder it was acting this way. She tried to be reassuring, but the dog howled and bit and scratched as if it were being killed. It resisted with all its might. Seeing no alternative, she climbed into the tub beside the desperate animal. And by now, the dog's panic made it lash out with teeth and claws. And pretty soon, the tub was filled with hair and dander and scabs and blood. Blood from the dog and blood from the assistant. Lost and abandoned, wounded and terrorized, that dog struggled with everything it had. But she kept at it. And with as much gentle determination as she could rouse, she washed and she rinsed and she combed every section of that little canine body, all the while singing and speaking and ever so gently repeating the dog's name. Finally, soaked and dirty and torn, something changed. The dog's barking and crying was silenced, and the biting and the scratching stopped, and the flinching and the shivering ceased. There was even a little wag of the tail there after a while. The relationship shifted, right? Fear gave way to a kind of trust. Oh, what a mess was this critter! And yet now the panic looked more like affection. Fur and blood and dirt and bugs everywhere. But these mortal enemies, could you say they were friends? In the ninth chapter of Luke's gospel, Jesus says to his disciples, follow me. Follow me. Would you try that rhythm? Ready? Follow me. Jesus bid them follow me. I can imagine that those disciples, though, under their breath saying, whoa, wait a minute, you're going to try to give us a bath, aren't you? And of course, would Jesus reply, yep, that's exactly what we're going to do. I want you to be cleaned up and healed up and raised up. And it's true, you're going to feel like you're going to die. Maybe there's a note in our file, too. Hydrophobic. We bite and we claw and we resist with everything we have. So how does it work? How does that change come? What trick happens? Simon Sinek was interviewed on NPR, and he, with a name like Simon Sinek, you wouldn't guess that he's an expert on trust. But he goes on to say that that trust is essential to human culture and human interaction, that it is fundamental to human experience. That trust, just simple trust, makes us human. Trust is critical to relationships from the very earliest moments of our lives. Dare I take a breath? Dare I receive nourishment? Dare I touch another being? It's kind of that basic question, is the universe out to kill me? Or is the universe out to love me? Sinek says that trust is very hard to describe and very difficult to understand, but you know it when you got it. You can't explain it or define a series of steps required to obtain it, but we can't live without it, right? That trust is powerful and important. That trust is basic, and it can't be faked, and it can't be controlled. Now, a betrayal of trust is devastating. If you've had that experience, you know. It harms the very deepest parts of our humanity, at least for a while. A cynic in the interview goes on to say that we tend to trust those that we perceive to be like ourselves. We tend to trust those that we perceive are similar to ourselves. And he gives the example of an American couple vacationing in France. They walk up and down the streets of Paris and have a grand time, and all of it foreign and exotic to their eyes. But then they encounter another couple who's from Texas, and they feel familiar. They feel like they're with somebody that they know, they understand, somebody who's close to their own home. And so the other couple says, you know, you got to try this restaurant. It's over by the museum, and you're going to love it. You know, it's the best food in town. And they believe it. Though they have no idea if this couple from Texas knows anything about food, knows anything about what they're talking about, or might be, what, pulling a fast one. I mean, who knows? Similarly, when the Frenchman comes along and says, man, do not eat there. They don't believe the Frenchman because he's different, even though he's probably right. Trust and loyalty and love and devotion, such precious things, but so elusive and so costly. Trust and loyalty and love and devotion. We want them all. But where do they come from? Trust grows when we're made to feel safe. Trust empowers us to take risks. Trust gives us the ability to experiment and to fail boldly, to explore. Trust between people makes it possible to know that someone's got my back. Trust in relationships makes it possible to count on help from another when we fall, that somebody's going to watch our stuff, that somebody's going to take care of my kids. Trust makes a good life possible. Trust makes a good life real. So Jesus says to his disciples, what? Follow me. Can we try it again? follow me. Should be easy, right? But I suppose on some level, I'll speak for myself, I say, I'm not too sure about this. Follow you? You're not like me. Follow you? Where are we going to go? Follow you? There's some stuff I got to go take care of first. Trust is hard. Do you know the cartoon Dilbert? Have you ever read that one? He kind of talks about how what it's like in business, you know, sort of the culture that's alive and those kinds of groups. In fact, I think we've got a couple, maybe a little cartoon we could show. Wally, how can I learn to tolerate my coworkers? It's time for you to learn about trust, Aesok. Let me show you. Turn around. This is called the trust fall, and you fall backward and trust me to catch you. Ready? Go. Why didn't you catch me? Well, it wouldn't be trust if it worked every time. What kind of lesson is that? This is how I tolerate my coworkers. There's another one. We'll do one more. Studies show that companies with high levels of trust in employees also perform the best. Well, if you ever start performing well, I'll trust you too. This didn't go the way I hoped. What kind of scam are you trying to pull? Well, Jesus says to you and to me, trust me. Trust me. A long time ago, Jesus invited a ragtag, no-account, bottom-of-the-ladder bunch of losers, and he said to all of them, follow me. Then the excuses came quick. Oh, I got to take care of a funeral. Oh, I got to go back and say goodbye. Oh, I got to plant the fields. What are your excuses? I got plenty. It's too hard or it's too scary. I might have to give up my pride. I might have to be honest about my shame. I might have to let go of my anger. And yet, even then, this amazing God climbs down into the tub with me, barking and bleeding and bawling. Follow me. Ready? Follow me. Amen.